Accession number 10436, Reel 1.
Mr. Zwodnicki, Reel 1. Could you tell me whereabouts you were born, Mr. Zwodnicki?
I was born in a very unusual place, in Moscow. Okay. The reason being, that during 1916, first of all, my father in 1905 was a revolution in Poland. And my father was thrown out from university and had to settle in Russia. Then as a doctor, he was called up to the Russian army, and the mother moved there as well, my father, and I was born in there, like many Poles were born in Siberia or God knows where. So that's, but I lived most of my life, nearly all of it, in Warsaw. We crossed the border during the Kerensky Revolution, and this the baggage, sort of luggage, how do we call it, stamps, were good enough for the Russian communist guards to let us through at that time. And since then we lived in Warsaw.
But both your parents were Catholic Poles?
Yes.
And you say your father was a physician?
Yes, he was a doctor.
Like a general practitioner?
Yeah. General practitioner, but with a tendency to be a surgeon as well.
So was your family standard of living comfortable?
Well, my mother was a dentist, but at the time, in Poland especially, yes, 20s and 30s were very difficult for everybody. So, well, we didn't starve, but the standard... It's nothing to compare with medical profession nowadays in this country. I'm not talking anything about United States. We have our own flat. The mother was have a cabinet in the flat. Father was practicing outside. I went through a grant through school to a state. I went to a state school. The arrangement in Poland at that time was if your father was or mother was a decorated for the civilian field or military field, you had the right to pass a special examination for a state school, and they were the best in Poland. And you have to pay, but it was about a third was a private school with charge. So I went through a gymnasium, it's near Stanisława Staszica in Warsaw, and I matriculated there because we have matriculation at school. In the last year we stopped the school about 2 months before. We have 2 months to prepare ourselves for matriculation, and you pass it and then opens the door for you for a person to go to the university. And I went to the University of Warsaw to the legal wing. Before that, I did my army service, national service. I don't know if you are aware how it worked in Poland before the war.
Please tell me.
Well, the first 6 weeks, you did with everybody, the boys without any special education standards. After that, you went to a divisional officer's school. And you did altogether 9 months there with maneuvers, so altogether the service took a year. And then you went, as I went to university. You could be called up for maneuvers at any time. You finished school as a corporal, sergeant, officer cadet, which meant that at any time you could be made a second lieutenant. In my case, I was... During my university studies, I was also chairman of the Polish Sailing Students Association. And later on, you have to pass 3 stages of examination. And I passed the second one. And then the Polish Navy hired us, contracted us to teach people sailing. We have a very small sea outlet at the time, and that was novelty. So we trained in sailing, schoolboys, girls, university students, doctors, advocates, anybody who is was interested in that. So instead of going to maneuvers, I managed for 2 years to go to this camp when I was training these young people and older people. And I returned in 1939, 2 days before the war started, from race, as we call it, a trip to Visby, Tallinn, and Helsinki. Well, from then I went to Warsaw to find out my call-up papers. Well, I didn't get my call-up papers. Like, as you know, there was a lot of fifth column which stopped a lot of call-up papers to be sent. Anyway, so I decided to start begging for a rifle. So I went to the army place and they said, oh no, we haven't got anything here for you, like all the thousands of other young men. So I went looking for the army, for the chance to join. And I found it near Lublin, just by chance. I met my colleague who was doing his army service then after passing, because you could do your army service straight from school or after you're finishing your education, sort of at university. Well, he chose that. And he was in the leading a squad of cyclists in army boots and trousers and his private jacket, because it wasn't enough. Anyway, through his help, I got a rifle eventually was enlisted, if you can put it, into a scratch battalion or march battalion, were made of people, soldiers from weren't called up or who were called up, you know, second sort of echelons of the army. Well, we marched and fought Germans through Helm Lubelski. I met my father. He was, just by accident, he was bandaging some wounded men, and I saw an officer with a Red Cross. And from the back, I realized that's my father. So I gave my rifle to somebody to hold on for a moment. And I ran to see him. Because I didn't see him. He was called up in March 39. He was called up. And he went to Helm Lubelski, to a field hospital. That was a big, it wasn't a field, it was a big hospital, army hospital. And we, of course, he came on leave in July, but I was at sea, so we haven't met. So we met by accident there. Of course, I returned to my unit and we didn't see each other for some time afterwards.
Can you describe the fighting that you were involved in?
It was a small skirmishes. We were sort of a rear guard. Two battalions which were made there in this place near Lublin went down south and they went to Tomaszów Lubelski. We went to Helm Lubelski. It was a sporadic fighting with the panzer troops, you know, they were small tanks and motorcycle recce units, you know, from the German army. We stood once or twice near villages for a longer time and defending them, and at the end we have to return because they put heavy artillery and burn the village all together, and we have to retreat and retreat and retreat. We have problems, of course, with the ammunition. If we were lucky to stop Germans for any longer time, we sort of have to crawl up to the dead and get the ammunition from them.
The kind of picture that's painted in Britain of the fighting between the Poles and the Germans, yes, in September 1931 is one of overwhelming German strength and versus Polish bravery. Is that the kind an accurate
picture? Well, it is, because first of all, it was a different type of war. It was a totally, you didn't know if the Germans were on your right, on your left, who was behind you, who was in front of you. We were sort of disorganized by this panzer troops moving from left, right, center, from the back. You never knew who is on your right, who is on your left. There was no line as it used to be in 1918 war. not in the sense of
positional war,
but you didn't know from hour to hour what's happening to the people. Another battalion was on the right, but half an hour later, we were lucky if they told us that they have to move back, or they didn't have time to do that, or the runner was killed or something like that. So it was everybody, you know, and of course we have minorities in the forces. Some of them behaved very well, some of them didn't. At the end, we learned on this 18th, we learned that the Russians moved in. And then again, we didn't know what they're moving for. Are they coming to help us or what? Anyway, we learned very quickly. We had a firefight with them, my unit. And
whereabouts was that?
That was near Lutsk, because we were going sort of down south to Zalesziki to cross the road to Romania. That was the directive. And then that was changed. We were trying to go to Włodzimierz Wołyński because we understood there was a bigger army unit there, which was Kleperk, the unit who fought to the 2nd of October, the last big army unit. They won the battle, but they ran out of ammunition. The same thing happened to us. We were overrun. And
how did the Russians compare as an enemy with the Germans to fight?
They came in a mass. It was like a Genghis Khan lot, because that was sort of, that wasn't mostly, not the regular Russian army. And the regular Russian army was very, very sort of, very funny sort of army. The officers, the difference between officer and an NCO and a private was a little square here or a little triangle here
on the collar.
That was all, and the discipline was rather ridiculous. I remember a Russian patrol supposed to be, say, moving at 10 o'clock. That was an NCO with 5 soldiers. Then the officer appeared and he said, "Where is the rest?" So the NCO said, "Oh, I don't know. I'll go and have a look." And he disappeared. It took him about half an hour to move from the, you know, late, which was for army discipline ridiculous. But of course, it changed later when Stalin realized what's going on, and they got all these Tsarist, you know, epaulets and all the
insignias,
and the call from Stalin fighting for communism and Stalin was changed to "you fight for your fatherland and motherland" and all this business. Another thing which happened, which is to Russian army at that time, the deserters and those who surrendered was pushed en masse through Poland, and whoever stopped was killed, and they didn't have food for them if they wanted. The Russia didn't sign the Geneva Convention. So, of course, the Germans played on that. So they pushed thousands of men through Poland on the main roads, and I saw the ditches with, later on, with bodies, all these bits eaten here, you know, cannibalism.
Bits of the bodies eaten?
Eaten, yes. The Russians, not fed, and frightened to stop because we'll be shot if somebody died, well. And we stopped, we ate this bit, so we saw a lot of it.
You mean part of a hog?
Yes, that's it, yes, eaten.
At the backside?
Yes, cut off and eaten. But that was later. Anyway, in Lutsk, was plenty of soldiers moving left, right and center, and Polish soldiers still in uniforms, of course. And they stopped some, I don't know why, for what special reason, and I found myself in a camp, which was, I think it was a 13th Polish Infantry Regiment barracks. And they made it a camp for prisoners of war, which wasn't ever declared, of course. And I found myself there.
Before you say anything else about the camp, could I just go back and ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
Because you mentioned the minorities.
Yes.
And you said that some of them
behaved
yes.
well. No.
Can you tell me in what specific way that you
Well, they deserted. And you have the gangs of Ukrainians, especially, who were shooting at the troops. Later on, they were they organize Ukrainian national army. That's later on, so things happen later. But the other minorities, like the Russians and Jews, and they behave quite well. They sort of, especially when they got, I was squad commander there, was about 18 men, and at the end I had about 14 or 13. We have sort of extra men coming in, but two or three deserted. But the rest stayed to the end.
What about German minorities in the Polish army?
I can tell you a story, maybe later on, when I return to Warsaw, about my colleague from university, who was a German. You come, if you remind me. And over there, we're on that east of Poland, there are no German minority to speak of. So that problem, and those who were called up, probably deserted much earlier. On the other side of Vistula, probably.
You said that your unit in September 1939 was a scratch unit.
That's right.
Did it have a number and a name?
It probably had a number, the name, but today it's very difficult. Major Zawadzki, Zawarczyński, Zawodzki. I know the name started with Z. But you see, it's all changed. It was all, who wanted to fight for it, who didn't, could go home. That was the state after, say, about 15th, 16th of September. And the officers in the company commanders, they changed. Some were killed in action, some disappeared, got lost. And, it's difficult today, after so many years, to remember. Oh, I know the battalion had a name. Had a name from this commanding officer, probably. But he probably had a number as well. As a, say, if the regiment which is supposed to belong to was, say, 36, that would be 360 regiment made of. But as I say, even then, these three battalions, two went one way and one went the other way. It's very difficult, this sort of time for me, because then we come later. I also was 16 hours in the sewers during the rising. Yes, and I lost a lot of memories. And my colleagues from my school remind me of all sort of things, and I do not remember. I think I remember after I was told. I didn't remember. I took about 20 English lessons at Methodists. They have a place in Warsaw, and we went with my colleague to this lesson. I didn't remember that until he told me about 20 years ago. We were talking about how did you learn English, as it is. He told me, well, we did have 20 lessons. I said, well, when? Where? And he told me we went to Methodist for 20 lessons. I said, oh, yes, I remember something about it. I said, oh, yes, the book was Eckersley. And so I have the gaps. So that would be, it's difficult for me because it's all sort of a mist.
Let's pick up the story with you going into the camp.
Yes, we were taken on with the guard, and there was a Polish barrack, I think it was 13 infantry regiments stationed there normally in peacetime. And I didn't particularly like it. There was a few thousand men there. I remember there was a field and there were some planes there. And I was told that earlier on, one of the Polish officers with a colleague got on one of these planes and escaped from the camp because there was a big field as well attached to it. And I saw the planes. I didn't see him escaping. Anyway, the camp was situated in this way, that was a street leading to a very modern school on its side, not in the front, on the side. And one side was Russian guard walking up and down, up and down. On the other side, people were walking, and hundreds of people in uniforms, Polish soldiers who just happened to be there. And I found that there is a loose plank, because there's a wooden, on this side, the wooden fence. And I found a plank which moved. So I waited a little bit, and waited for the guard. There was only one guard walking up and down. I waited for him to pass it. And I just took it up and ran to the other side of the street and mixed up with all other people. The funny part about it is, two years ago, we were in California with our friends. And we were talking about, like, Polish people in the Tunica party talk. And the fellow said, "You didn't escape through this loose plank." I said, "I did." And he did as well. We don't know which day it was. You know, we couldn't sort of work it out. But he escaped through the same plank. Loose plank.
But probably it was October 39?
Could have been September. Must have been October. It was before they started taking them to Szepietówka, to the border point, and to Russia. I couldn't give you the exact date.
It doesn't matter.
Anyway, then I met two other officer cadets. We still have our epaulets and the marquee, you know, the insignias. And we decided not to take them. We went to Lwów. And three of us decided, well, we have to go on the other side, on the Polish side, the German side, because there's nothing to do in Russia side. We have no families, nothing. We decided to go back to Warsaw. All three of us were from Warsaw. So we traveled to a place called Brześć Litewski. And this was a border was on the Bug River over there. We got on this railway station. It was a young boy, schoolboy. Obviously, he looked at us, our uniforms. He came to us and said, "Do you have anywhere to stay?" So we said, "No." So he said, "Well, come to us. My father is a teacher, and you can stay with us until you decide what to do." And Brześć was full of people trying to escape from the east to the west, let's call it like that, to this demarcation line. Well, we stayed a day with them, slept on the floor, you know, it's not important. Anyway, we were very friendly, very nice Polish people who took us. And we decided to cross, of course, the border. And we were tossing what you're going to do. There are so-called smugglers who offered, you know, for so many zloty was still, had its value, lower, but still had its value. Said, "Well, we take you for so much, and we didn't like it. We knew what the smugglers do. They send you straight to the German or Russian post, you know, very often. Some of them probably didn't, but it did happen. We knew about it. We were told on top of it by these people we stayed with. So I said, "Well, let's..." It was a totally idiotic idea, but at the time I spoke good Russian. My father insisted that if you learn French at school, I'll teach you speak Russian. Not write, but speak Russian. It's always good to know language of one of your enemies, as you speaking French or do Russian. And I spoke quite a reasonable Russian. I said, "Well, look, we don't risk very much. Let's go to the commandir Goroda, the town major, Russian town major." So at 8 o'clock in the morning, three idiots appeared in front of a guard standing with his bayonet on, rifle, and he said, "We would like to see the town major, Russian town major." He said, "Подождите, wait." And he opened the door, and we saw him lying on the desk, his cap under his head. This fellow woke him up. He got up, lick his palms, did his hairdo, and called us in. And I started the story. "We would like to bring families, our families, to our side." When I said our side, he nearly fainted. But the cheek of it sort of killed him. And of course I said, "Well, with Germans, we have to risk when we cross the border, if they catch us, well, it's a risk, but we wouldn't like to be stopped by our people on our side. So can you give us a pass?" And he didn't know what to say. It shook him, you know. He didn't know really what to think about it. And he said, "Well, I'm sorry, the pass can be only given by Moscow." So he said, "Well, what can you do for us? Something? Can you do something for us?" He said, "Well, if you're stopped by our patrol on our side, tell them to commander, a town major in Brest Litovsk. All right, well, that was enough for us. I don't think he gave us a name. But he told us to ring, you know. We went on a train which was going alongside the Bug, the river. There was hundreds of people. There was a forest there, and the train stopped in the forest because the driver was paid, you know, by people who and smugglers, and we disappeared in this forest. We got the side of the river, and of course was a sort of mixed. It wasn't an army, Russian army patrol. It was a communist patrol, local. So they stop us. We told them, we'll give a ring to the commander of town Brest-Litovsky. Of course, they lock us up for about 2 hours. That was November. It was dark. It was misty. The river was full of mist, you know, and it was cold. Before that, we bought a lot of things. We bought pig's fat, because we knew on the other side there was very food was very scarce. Salt and something else, tea, because you still could buy tea for reasonable prices on that side. So I think I was carrying about 20 kilos each of us of food to take on the side. Anyway, they locked us up. They tried to take that stuff from us, and we said, no, you can't. You first ring the town major. Of course, they were stupid, and they didn't have a chance to ring. But they were afraid because, well, they started thinking, these three fellows in Polish army uniforms with distinctions, and they say, ring army authority in Brest-Litovsky. Could it be a special unit going on the other side to spy, to, you know, they have to be careful. So they let us go after 2 hours, and we found a Polish fellow who had a little boat and got us through. As we were going, we saw this strong light on the right-hand side and some shots and we heard. But he said, do you want to go there? No, I said, you go. My father always told me, go straight. If you cross the border, go straight as far as you can. So we did. We went straight on. It was a little village, and we knocked. And the Polish people said, oh, come in, of course. And they fed us, and they stayed the night, and we get cart and horses and take you to the railway station in the morning.